Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we are celebrating Andrew Lloyd Webber with a Phantom of the Opera crossover. So it is set to close on Broadway, and I'm having a handful of what I'm calling Phantom Cats on the podcast. So my guest today has been performing as a swing in the Phantom of the Opera, but before that, she was Jelly Lorum and Griddlebone in the Hamburg, Germany production of Cats. So welcome, Marnie Robb, and thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you. You did Cats in the 90s, like the 1999, 2000. So I always like to start, and my first question usually is, were you obsessed with the 98 movie? But you were doing Cats like right around when that released. So I always love to start, though, with when was the first time you were introduced to the show? Like, did you have a chance to see it before you were cast in it?
That's such a fun question. The 98 movie was not really on my radar, to be honest. I grew up in New York, New Jersey area, so I came to Broadway. But Cats, I kind of always knew that it was there in the background. It was kind of part of the fixtures in Broadway. But the first time I saw the show was after I signed my contract to go.
Okay. So you signed the contract. It's like, I probably should go see it before.
Exactly. Well, it was kind of my little present to myself. Right after I signed the contract, I went and saw the show. And I sat next to a couple of Italian tourists who were thrilled to be there. And I watched the show and I was like, huh, I'm going to need to unpack this and see this a few more times because it was not really what I was expecting. And I was expecting kind of more plot hanging it together. So it was so funny to be kind of so peripherally familiar with something and yet not really know what it was. But it was kind of cool to approach something with a clean slate.
Yeah. So did you, like, I'm kind of fascinated by, you know, now that you've signed this contract, you know you're going to go as Jelly. Did you spend most of the time watching her the entire show, or were you still kind of like, I want to just see everything?
I was trying to absorb everything. I was like, okay, what is this show? What is happening? Who are these cats? When the actors come out in the very beginning to do Green Eyes, I was like, oh my goodness, here they are. They're next to me.
Yeah.
You know, they're in the aisles.
And what was your, I guess, like, what, how would you describe that first viewing in the sense of like, what did you think you saw? Because like, I do think as someone who, like, some people get to see it a ton of times. A lot of people only get to see it once. And when you see it once, it's kind of hard to unpack that first time. So what was your interpretation that first time?
My overall impression was that I'm somebody who really kind of focuses on story. I love a good yarn. No pun intended. And this one, I mean, that's not really Katz's thing.
Yeah.
So I was like looking for the story and where is it? So that left me confused. That left me confused. And I was like, well, I guess I have a lot of homework to do. I have a lot of work to do in rehearsal. But thankfully, the way they did it the way they structured it in Germany, they replaced most of the cast. So it was a giant cast turnover. So I got to rehearse with like 20 people, and we rehearsed for, I think, 4 weeks.
Okay. Yeah. So it's fun hearing you say that, because I'm the same way. And I'm like, I like this like sitcom writing of A line, B line through stories coming together at the end. And Cats does not give you that. And that was my gripe when I first saw it, was like, I'm grasping to write my own story. And that's part of why we're here today, is I've tried to write my own story for this. So you go over, I was going to ask, my next question was, is that you kind of come in mid-run. This production ran 15 years. And so you're coming in, not even mid-run, it was towards the end of the run. Mm-hmm. But you got to have 20 different people you rehearse with. I want to hear a little bit, there's two parts I really want to hear about the rehearsal process for you. I think one is, as an American from New York, going to learn the show in German. And it's not like it's a show you knew the whole thing in English and we're just now relearning the words. What was that process like? It's like, did you speak any German when you started?
Well, so my background and my undergrad degree is in vocal performance in opera. So I have a classical background, and that was really helpful because I had to study languages. So I did study some German. I hadn't actually ever lived in a place where I needed to speak it, but I knew basic grammar. I knew basic German diction, pronunciation. So that was a challenge, but it was a challenge that I was kind of prepared to take on.
Interesting. That's such an interesting thing. Cause like, I remember the first time I talked to anybody that did the German production that wasn't German, I'm like, how do you learn it? You know, it's hard enough to learn a show and your native language, to learn it in an entirely different language is fascinating.
Well, to get really, I guess, nitpicky about it, there's a style of pronunciation that works for opera. And for Cats, it was just more colloquial a more spoken pronunciation. So that was a challenge to kind of figure out how to do that. And also, I know they worked with me because the Gus the Theater Cat song is so kind of spoken and intimate. You want to connect with the audience. And if the audience is all German, you don't want to sound like you have a foreign accent when you're doing it. So they tried their best with me. And at the time, I mean, I don't know, I haven't spoken German in forever, so I really don't know what would come out of my mouth if I tried right now. But back then, my pronunciation was pretty good. So I took German while I was there. I went to the Volkshochschule to try to take some classes. Mm-hmm. So that helped a little bit. One thing I was completely paranoid about all the time was the possibility of going up on a lyric. Because if you have, there's no ad-libbing.
Yeah.
You know, you can't mess up. And for Jelly Lorum solo, you're just kind of out there.
Yeah.
You know, you're not in an ensemble with a bunch of cats who can just do some other dialogue and tread water for you while you gather your brain.
It's, again, kind of fascinating. It's like, I think that the things that have, as someone who's not a performer and not, you know, a lot of this is all fascinating to me because it's like, I can't even fathom doing any of it. But then I hear about swings and I hear about learning in a different language and all these other things. I'm like, this seems so hard to do without adding any extra layers to it. And then you add those extra layers, and to your point, like, you can't ad lib, you can't do this, you can't do that. And it's, you know, it's just such a unique kind of piece to this, but such a cool piece to this too.
I have great respect for all of the cats who were swings, because I would talk to them, and I'm sure you probably heard also that sometimes during the Jellicle Ball, they would have to look down and see what costume they were wearing to remember which space to run to, because they're doing the same dance, but they have to know where their entrances and exits are. So that blew my mind. And also the fact that a lot of these are just fierce, formidable dancers who come in and who haven't really said any words on stage in their native language or otherwise, and now they're being thrown a foreign language.
Yeah.
So that was very challenging for them. And the dancing is not really my comfort zone. That was, I was like, woof, okay, here we go. Yeah. I've got to learn the Jellicle Ball.
Yeah. Yeah. 12, 13 minutes of intense dancing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to the other part of that, that you got to at least rehearse with a bunch of people coming in, but what was the, like there's the rehearsal of the dance and the staging and everything else. There's also in Cats, I think a big part of it is the character. So how much like of a backstory were you given? How much of the like the Cats lore were you told when you're kind of going in midway through the run?
Well, that's interesting. I remember. So I was, 24, I think 23 when I went over there. And I do remember this one giant ensemble rehearsal with the incredible Joanne Robinson. And we were supposed to do an improv all together where we just got accustomed to the physicality of being Cats and being Cats together. And it was, you know, we didn't know each other very well at that point, and yet we all had to kind of crawl around a room and like paw at each other and know who were kittens and who were middle-aged cats and who were the older cats. And at one point somebody like threw a newspaper and some like giant yarn ball at us, and we had to just bat it around and play with it, and someone wound up shredding the newspaper. It was slightly dangerous to have all of these people who are very creatively inclined and a little kooky and who don't know each other very well, and who are, most of these dancers are so kinetically intelligent, to have everybody kind of do a free for all improv was intimidating, yeah. To be honest. Yeah. So that I remember doing that. And in advance of that, I do remember doing, here, hold on a second. I'm so sorry. My email is on and we keep getting some dings. So I'm just going to close out of my email. I remember kind of doing table work, I think sitting in a circle and doing table work and kind of orienting everybody's character to everyone else's. And a very important tier system was age. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
So let's go into what do you remember of that like table? And we can start with Jelly. Like what was, like you're told the ages and here's who they are, but how much are you told about the jokal choice and all these other pieces and all the relationships that come with that? And this might be mother daughter, these might be husband wife, these versions of that.
For Jelly, I'm sure we were told a lot, and at this point I don't remember.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember because it was so long ago. So what I do think of Jelly, and maybe some of this is what I was told, and maybe some of this is what I kind of came up with during the course of the run. It kind of blends together at this point. But Jelly is she's not a kitten. She's not quite as old as, she's more of a middle-aged cat, maybe like young middle age. And I always imagine that if Jelly had a profession, she would be a nurse. Because she would be one of those awesome nurses who was just, you know, maybe working with the elderly or working with the people who have terminal illnesses, and she would just be the one who was always upbeat and always there with a smile and an encouraging word, and just really good at taking care of people who are kind of, you know, on their way out for whatever reason.
Yeah, she does have that very motherly, I think it's a lot of the association with Gus is like you kind of tie her character with Gus and being the one that really cares for him. And especially in the 98 movie, the Gus was a very old, blind, famous British performer, and they had to like walk him out on stage. You know, it's like Joey had to like physically walk him out on stage.
Yeah.
And so you get some of that, like a lot of the theories around that are the combination of that relationship
and the kittens too. I mean, mm-hmm. when Jelly's not in the spotlight with Gus, she's kind of minding the kittens and taking care of them and making sure during Grisabella's entrances that the kittens are not, if they're curious about her, that get them, stay away from her, she's bad news.
Yeah. I would love to hear a little bit about Griddlebone. Like, did they tell you anything about Griddlebone? Because it's not in the revival. It's like not in the current production. So it's like, it's one that I don't know as much about besides what I saw in the 98 movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm glad, you know, in hindsight, because I know it was cut from the revival, and I believe as it should be, it's so problematic, and it's long. Also, it's super long and it's very cuttable. That said, I'm really glad I got to do it because it was a lot of fun. It's particularly for Griddlebone, you know, for Gus and Grillbone, it's super fun. And also, I had just recently graduated from, I had been doing opera. So it was kind of fun to actually do something that was a take on grand opera.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting piece. It is problematic. It's why it kind of got canceled. Mm-hmm. But it's also, it's like one of the ones where I feel like I have a pretty good grasp, or at least theories on backgrounds of all this, like a lot of the cats. Mm-hmm. And you've got some either written history by cast members or fans, but then you've got Growlithe and Griddlebone, and it's like they're kind of just this little insert. And so there's not a lot of like what they actually are.
Well, I think that they are, character-wise, I don't think they're that deep, because I think that they are actors playing roles. I think it's kind of a flashback to a role that Gus did. So, and you've got, he mentions, or I guess Jelly mentions Irving and Tree, who are in the text of the poem. Mm-hmm. And they were, I mean, to have, you know, in the 98 movie, you mentioned an old, renowned British actor, and then we had Sir Ian McKellen doing it in the recent movie. You know, these guys were, they did everything. They did all this grand stuff. I mean, they weren't opera singers necessarily, but to do a musicalized version of that, I think this was like their Richard III or their, you know, it was their amazingness, but just put into opera form.
Yeah. I have one more Jelly question, and I think we can go on to some other topics. I want to know who else did you think about relationships with other cats? So obviously there's Gus. That one's the staple. Then there's, you already mentioned the kittens, but did you think about your relationship? Like, what was your thought with Grizabella or with Buster for Jones or with some of these other kind of the middle age cats? Like, how did you relate Jelly to them?
So, there was that adorable, Buster Jones dance, and Jenny Annie Dots kind of takes the lead on that. But I the way I always felt about it, I don't know if this is, I don't think this is anything anyone told me, but I just felt that, that Jelly has a bit of a crush on Buster, and, Buster and Jenny Annie Dots are tight. So there's a little bit of like, not mean jealousy, but like, gosh, I wish I was her, you know?
So with Jenny, okay. So there was because I do feel like there's a little bit of a relationship with Buster for Jones, or there's like an old friendship or something there. I had always projected it back to Grizabella and not to Jenny, but that's interesting because Jenny's doing the dance, you're saying, kind of leading that number.
Yeah, so that's how and Jelly and Jenny are together a lot in the staging. So I kind of viewed her, and maybe that's because of where the two of us were as actors, you know, and our relationship, we kind of brought that in, where I just looked up to her. And so we kind of take the cues from her, you know, she was more of the alpha friend.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What about Old Deuteronomy? Was there any thought or relationship with Old Deuteronomy and his sons, like the Tuggers and the Mosophiles and the McCavity?
Well, that's interesting. It always felt like something that Jelly didn't necessarily have a place within it. That's a little bit like the more drama side of the family and part of the family. There's just a lot of drama in there, and Jelly is more of a mind the children. And the elderly, and keep the peace, and take care of the people, or the cats. So I think it's more of like a, okay, cross your arms, and just like, let them be them. And, you know, with respect to the patriarch.
So that makes sense. I do feel like it's the Joey Jenny motherly show of this piece of like, there's a lot of the two of those cats kind of like, keeping more things in line and making sure stuff's going, but also like the respect of Gus and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like letting these, older male cats shine where they can. And also, you know, maybe indulging them a bit, but keeping the engine running.
Mm-hmm. We'll be right back more to some crazy cats conversations after this short break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Okay, let's fast forward to Phantom. So I am fascinated by the fact that these are two Andrea Weber shows because they're so vastly different.
Yeah.
But tell me about was Phantom, as a more of an opera background, was Phantom more of the dream and Cats was early on in your career and just was something happened? Or how did Phantom kind of play a role into your career?
Well, I actually didn't audition for Cats. I auditioned for Phantom and then got a call. I guess they passed my name along to people and then I got a final callback for Cats when I hadn't gone in for it. So it was okay. I went in for Phantom and then got a callback for Cats and was what? How did that happen?
Wow.
Yeah. So that's interesting that I guess that gives a little bit of a framework for your question.
Yeah. No, I think that's a whole different set of questions. I think that's kind of fascinating that I think because there's that part, but that you go in for essentially Andrew Lloyd Webber, you go in for there and it's we maybe here later, but here now we have this opportunity. So that's such a unique thing. I'm so unknowledgeable about this industry that I'm I didn't even know that was a thing, that you could just go in and audition for something and then you just get a call immediately being here you go.
Yeah. Well, I think, I don't think it's a thing necessarily. I think there's some overlap in Cats and Phantom, among the creatives. And so I think somebody was we need, maybe this person might be interested in hearing her because there's a need that needs to be filled over there. And I think we're good over here for now, but she's good. Let's keep her on a list, kind of a thing,
Yeah. Yeah. So you get cast in Phantom. Mm-hmm. How much did having the background of working on an Andrew Lloyd show help? They're so different. It's kind of even hard to see, but there's also a little bit of, not similarities, but you said, a lot of the same creatives and people that work on both shows.
Yeah, well, I think probably the thing that was the most helpful is the size and scale of the show. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to be able to have an experience of having gone in to a show that has that level of brand power and that level of multiple productions worldwide. They are run maybe not similarly, but it's commercialized, it's corporatized, not in a bad way, but just it's a large business.
It's not like a new up and coming, hope we make it through a run type of show. It's something that's a little bit more established and a staple.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's always the business has its own inherent fragility in it. This is more of a larger machine with knowledgeable people who are running it, and it has more momentum, and it has its audience that has been cultivated, and there's a little bit more confidence that they're going to keep coming.
Did you see any parallels between the two shows, and not in terms of prepping and people and everything else, but the, like, I always think Cats is, there's not a lot of story, but there's this like great world they've built. And Phantom is, you've got this like kind of incredible story with smaller world. You know, it's like you're in the theater most of the time, or in, you know, a couple other pieces to it, but Cats, you're in this like entire universe of where they're all coming back together. But did you see any other kind of like, this is what I really connected between the two, or type of thoughts?
Well, that's what an interesting question. And yeah, I love your description of the world as opposed to, you know, the size of the world. I agree with that. And I mean, I guess we're starting, since the Gaston Leroux book was already written, the source material was more comprehensive, and the source material for Cats is just, you know, a book of poems. So there's so much room in there for world building. Yeah. Whereas, I mean, aside from the physical limitation that the Phantom of the Opera takes place in an opera house, so it's in, you know, it's in one place, and the people and the Victorian world is like well documented, but Cat, we don't know about the inner lives of Cats. Yeah. So we get to make it up, you know.
Exactly.
And it, I mean, it's just applause all around for building all of that amazing world. I think that's partly why you're able to have a podcast about it, because it's just, there's so much room for imagination.
So much, exactly. And it is a little bit of a world of telephone, where it's, because there's so much interpretation and fan theories and everything else, like some of those fan theories become reality. Because they get, especially now, they get DM'd to cast members, or, you know, they hear about something else, and they can then use that and internalize that as part of like, oh, maybe I haven't thought about that. Maybe I can play it that way tonight, because it's not going to change the story. It might change an interaction with a cat, which is the part that is open for interpretation, or open to allow to have those things.
That was really fun, actually, to have so much. Because you're on stage the whole time, so you have a lot of time where you're supposed to be, you know, the crowd, in air quotes.
Yeah, I guess if we go back to that with Cats, like how much did you try to do that? Like how much was built by relationships of the people that you knew in the cast, or how much of it was like, this is what I was kind of told? Like you have a lot of freedom there. How did you try to make that when you're doing it 8 times a week? Part of the story.
Well, being given, now there, you know, there are so many things that I have kind of faded into the woodwork for me after all this time. But
yeah,
I do remember, and this is, you know, when I teach also, in building relationships among people, hierarchies are important, and you can determine hierarchies in a lot of different ways. And for the Cats, you know, it determines behavior and relationship. So for Cats, knowing who's older and who has more status, or who's younger and who needs caretaking, that helps define, just at least gives a general framework for a lot of the relationships. And then you can kind of start building from there.
Mm-hmm. What about the one that's like, when the arc of the story is built around the relationship with Grisabella? Mm-hmm. How did you think about that one?
Well, because we're all having this big meeting, and it's like the annual, very special, most special meeting of the year. And Grisabella is pointedly not invited. And that's a big deal. So to have her crash the party is horrible and shocking. And so I guess that there's one thing that may be very, maybe this is a comparison between Phantom and Cats, you know, that I didn't think of before to answer your earlier question. Because these are both originally, you know, British musicals, and for Cats, British stories, poems, I think hierarchies and status, and also the appropriate level of pomp and circumstance and etiquette, it is very important. And for Victorian era, for Phantom, I mean, that's, you know, very, everything's very stratified, and you kind of have to play your role in society, or if you choose to break out of it, then it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're trying to elbow the boundaries of your role, that's huge. And for Cats, I think Grisabella's whatever the etiquette and the structure and the status is in this world of cats, Grisabella's on the outside of it. So I think everything that she does, because of whatever errors in, she's made, whatever made her, whatever put her on the outs, has to be terribly shocking.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you every night, like what was the moment that you kind of almost had to have yourself have to then welcome her back?
Well, I think it's, it's such that beautiful moment when Silva and Victoria, it's the kittens really. And isn't it always, you know, the next generation, the new generation that will buck the etiquette trend and kind of override it because, and find the humanity, you know, where humanity wins over whatever etiquette or history or pomp and circumstance existed in the past. So I think the kittens kind of break that boundary. And then I think that leaves room that for me anyway, that is what kind of lets the scales fall from her eyes, from Jelly's eyes, and lets her be like, oh, wait, I've been unfair.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, let's go into the rapid fire because I want to get to the $1 million question here.
Okay.
So first is if you could go back on Cats and you could play one night, one role, anyone, whether you can sing it, dance it, male, female, anything, who would you want to go on as for one night?
Oh, maybe Bombi.
Bomb. Such a fun one, right?
Yeah, super fun.
Who are your favorite and least favorite cats?
I think, oh gosh, I love Cassandra. She's just haughty and amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I have a least favorite cat. I guess I always forget about Skimbleshanks. I just kind of forget about him.
That's gonna be a controversial pick. Yeah, it's great. I had some animosity towards it, but he's got a very strong fan base. So.
Sorry.
So I love it.
Fans.
I think it's great. It's honest. What is your favorite song in the show?
Favorite song in the show. This is like, I guess this doesn't qualify as a song really, but the naming of cats.
I just think that sets it up.
I had to do it in German, so it always felt like, ooh, I get to kind of chew these words that are slightly unfamiliar to me, but I always felt like, ooh, I accomplished it, you know?
That's awesome. Here's my phantom crossover. If a cat was going to haunt a theater, which one do you think would be best at doing that?
Well, I mean, McCavity.
McCavity? I think it's Bustopher. I think Bustopher doesn't leave his box. I think he's in that box the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
I like McCavity though. Very haunting and it would be there's a lot of that
scary.
That is the same vibe. Yeah, you get a similar vibe.
Mm-hmm. Or Tugger. I mean he'd like stage a dance party or something, but
yeah, it'd be a fun haunting. It wouldn't be it would be like way more more lighthearted and cocky, but still, it would be a little bit of a terror.
Unpredictable.
Yeah. Okay, so the final question I have is, I have argued at length that I don't think Grisabella is the right Jellicle choice. So I want to hear, do you want to defend Grisabella? Or if not, who would you pick and why?
Well, I don't feel the need to defend Grisabella.
Great.
It didn't occur to me that we should get to pick, but obviously that's the whole thrust behind Cats, that we get to pick. And so... Yeah. But I thought, well, this show's already been written and it's the person, the cat is picked. So I love this question. And I mean, hands down, Gus.
I mean,
Gus the theater
for,
cat.
For it. So give me your rationale, though, of like why Gus over Grisabella?
Well, so Gus is based on, you know, these just incredible actors of the, you know, the turn of the 19th to 20th century, all these legendary actor, theater manager types. And one of the, you know, I just did like a quick search because I know that Irving and Tree, who are mentioned in the Gus the Theater Cat song, are, you know, these big actors. And I think it was Sir Henry Irving was the first actor manager to be awarded a knighthood.
Wow.
So it's already there. Yeah. You know, and like Gus the Theater Cat is basically the cat representation of this incredible legacy of elevating and awarding these legends for the cultural gifts that they've given us. So definitely Gus.
Yeah, I Gus is a very, I think, is the most common pick outside of Grisabella. And I think it's fair, because it's, you know, he's lived a great life. He's got the experience. He's frail. He looks like he's ready to go. And I love it. I'm curious mm-hmm. if your cast spent any time thinking about this, or if this is just me and the fans, about who was the pick the year before and who's the pick the year after. Like, is that at all ever discussed, or do you just go, this is our one ball, this is what we're thinking about this year?
Oh, no, I don't know if that was ever discussed. Not in my memory. But again, you know, it was a long time ago, so.
I'd be curious if you were thinking, let's say Grizabel doesn't come back and you pick Gus. Mm-hmm. How are you thinking about next year's ball? Like, who's going next year? Like, when's your turn as Jelly?
So Jelly's kind of on the young side. And also, I think because of how I perceive Jelly's nature as a caretaker, I don't imagine that Jelly would be like, me, my turn. You know, I think that someone else would, like others would definitely need to campaign for Jelly.
Yeah.
So but selfless. I do think, but I do think ultimately, in, you know, another, however, I don't know how long a cat's lifespan is, or the nine lifespan, but whenever Jelly is up there and a candidate after having lived a good life caring for others, I think it'll probably be a unanimous decision 1 year to pick Jelly.
Yeah. So almost like the campaigning will happen a little bit before, and then it's like, all right, this is obviously
time. And everyone's going to be like, shoo in.
Yeah, no,
it's Jelly's turn.
No, Grizabel is coming back that year. It's Jelly.
Yeah. If Grizabel came back the year that Jelly was going to be up, like, everybody would be like, get out.
Yeah,
there'd be no contest.
Well, this has been so fun. One question I always like to ask is, how can people stay in touch with you and keep up with what you're working on?
Oh, well, I'm kind of a grandma about posting on Instagram, but I am there. I'm at Marnie C. So yeah, at me.
Love it. So give a follow. I'll link it in the notes.
Sure.
These will be coming out right at the very end of Phantom, but people hopefully have seen you do the performance, because it's been on forever.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me again. This has been really fun.
This was a blast. Thank you for being an amazing guest and telling your story.
Of course. Right.
And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.